Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis
and Jeff Webb,
and this is Tax Tuesday. So first off, welcome. Thanks for joining us. I know there's lots of other options right now. I'm sure there's lots of things you could be watching, Tiger King or whatever else.
Yeah.
And did you see the special on last night?
No, I did not.
Oh my gosh. Anyway,
I had to come into the office so I wouldn't have to watch Gilmore Girls again.
Oh boy. All right. Hey, we have a lot to get through. Gilmore Girls. I have never seen that. I think that's probably a good thing. First off, can you guys hear us loud and clear? Let us know if we're coming through. If you need us to adjust volumes or whatever else, we can certainly do that. We have lots and lots of questions already coming in. I'm just going to answer a couple of them just because this is going to be lots of questions, I'm sure. So number one, somebody says, hey, I have a 2018 net operating loss. I want to carry it back. Do I have to carry it back to 2013 or just back to 2015? So it's as far back as it takes to use up your loss using each year. So if you have a 2018 NOL, you can carry it to 2017, 2016, 2015, 2014, 2013 in that order. You have to use up all the losses, or you could elect not to carry it back at all, and you could just carry it forward. How many years?
Indefinitely now.
Yeah, indefinitely. So you could wipe out 2019. So it depends on what's better for you. Is the net operating loss? That's a business loss. Right. There's no such thing. Is there an NOL for an individual? I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, but it would still have to be business related.
It has to be business related. Yeah. So I just sent in two questions via email. Diane, you still should ask them here because we have hundreds of emails that come in. All right. Most of our business income is considered passive income from real estate. I do not take a paycheck. Also, our rents have been coming in. Do I qualify for a PPP or EIDL? Great question. It depends. For the PPP, you got to have payroll or active business. So it's going to be something on a Schedule C or it's going to be a W-2. If all you're doing is doing passive real estate, chances are that's not going to qualify. For the EIDL, it's a loan. So it's not like it's the PPP where there's a big chunk of forgiveness. It's just a loan. And you have to be damaged by the coronavirus, which means a lot of folks are waiting for the other shoe to drop. There we go. I've been drinking a lot today. You got to make sure that that you actually have damages. And a lot of folks, they believe they're going to be late. So I looked at the stats from the National Multifamily Organization yesterday. I forget the last two letters to it. It's a four-letter spiel, my Bob. But what they did is polling their folks, they've collected 83% of their rents, and that's not low. That's actually right on for the first week of a month. So if they're going to have a drop, it's going to be next month. And what they did have a spike in is working out payment plans for people. So they collected quite a bit, but might be pushing some of the rents in the future. We have to use the NOL in reverse order. Yes. So Lee, we were literally just having that conversation. NOLs, you used to take it back to the farthest year and then carry it forward. Now it's you use it in the most recent year and you go take it back. All right. So we have lots and lots and lots. Okay. I open my solo 401k QRP. Do I have to file a tax return for it? Keith, only if it's over $250,000 and you're married. Is it 125 or is it always 250?
It's always 250.
250
because it's plan related. Not
yes, it's you're right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why. Thank God Jeff is here because, unless you have over 250,000. If you do have 250,000, then you file the 5500. That just got extended to it.
July 15th.
July 15th. So if it was last year, we advocate that if you have, $100,000 or so in it, it's not a bad idea to file it, even if you're not required to, just because it starts the tolling of the statute of limitations for them to audit. All right, let's go on. Here's all of our social media, all of our Facebook page, YouTube, if you like this sort of information. and you're a glutton for punishment, jump on and absorb to your heart's content. Now, there's actually a lot of really good information on these sites. We put out quite literally hundreds of hours of content on an annual basis, all of it free for you. So you can go to these sites and get a lot of questions or a lot of questions answered. Get a lot of answers to your questions. There we go. Tax Tuesday rules. You can ask your questions live, as you can see. Now, here's the deal. If somebody sends me and you start trolling me because I'm not advancing the slides because I'm answering questions, then I'm going to make fun of you. And I'm going to make fun of you live. I'll probably call you out and just say, hey, the deal is, yeah, we answer questions as they come in. I do not show you guys the questions coming in because there are names attached to it. And I am not going to violate somebody's privacy. So want to make sure that nobody goes out there and says something that could get them as in hot water right on a webinar that's been recorded. So we read them out. We take out any personally identifying information. You'll hear me use some names once in a while, like a Lisa, like a Keith, like a Johnny. But that's about it. And let's see. Can I delay paying quarterly year 2019 estimated tax payments since tax returns are now due July 15th instead of being due tomorrow? Believe I pay my estimated 2019 based on my 2018. I would be overpaying 2019 since my business has been damaged. So everything's delayed until...
Yeah, the first and second quarters are going to be delayed. Yeah. And I think we'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be delayed until July 15th.
So hang tight. Yeah, so are now due. The estimated payments you do not have to pay. Everything's been delayed. And if I fund a traditional IRA over the year, am I able to move those funds into a QRP? Yes. In fact, under the CARES Act, some of you guys are realizing that you could get about $200,000 out of a plan if you have a QRP, because you could take $100,000 as an early withdrawal, and you do not, if you, as long as you pay it back by December 31st, 2022, so it's this three-year period. It's actually tax years. So it's the end of the third tax year, which is 2022. As long as you pay it back, you pay no penalty or interest or anything. So you can do that with the first 100, but to get a second 100 out, you have to have a qualified retirement plan. You have to have a 401k, 403b, 457. An IRA will not work, and you take a loan out of it up to $100,000. So you can literally get $200,000 out of an IRA if you want. 100 of it into a QR, into a 401k. So, yes, somebody says I registered. Hey, we'll look into this stuff. All right. I have, I'm just going to start jumping in because you know what? We have so much going on. You guys are asking so many questions. I can already tell we're going to be here till midnight. Jeff's agreed to stay on until 1 a.m. now we're going to be done. We always say an hour, but it never seems to happen. Updates on tax impact to COVID-19. We have a ton. Tax stuff going on. More importantly, we have all these paycheck protection programs and EIDLs and all that fun stuff. Yes, David, they make fun of me in real time and they send me mean things. And it's just not nice. Almost time to click the slide. See? Mm-hmm. Munich, and he's just sitting there going, why is that reporter asking me that question? You can just see him with disdain in his eyes, thinking of another $250 billion to dump into the Paycheck Protection Program. Here's the reality of the Paycheck Protection Program. If you don't have a great relationship with your bank or know somebody who has a relationship with a lender, you're not going to get a loan. And if you do get the loan, chances are a big chunk of it's not going to be forgiven unless you bring back all your employees. So if it's just you, fantastic. I just don't think they're going to give you a loan because the banks are picking and choosing. We have a fantastic lender that we use, and even they are still, you could just see it. It's like there's a set number of dollars, and they want to be very comfortable that they're not going to give money to somebody that they never get the money from the SBA. So they are being very cagey. And we have $160 billion that's been issued of the that's been approved, which is different. I've heard 160 now, $220 billion that's been authorized by the SBA. So people keep saying, well, where's the cash? Well, they authorized the loan. So the lender puts loan docs out and gives the money. We've had several people get their money, but the SBA authorizes it before the lender gives you that money. They have 10 days. The lender has 10 days. So your bank has 10 days from the authorization to give you the money. In the act, it was 5 days. And then the Treasury came out and the SBA came out and said 10. in a techno, what do they call it? They gave out guidance, written guidance. Somebody says net operating loss is filing form 1045, the best method for getting a net operating loss carryback.
Yeah, I would say so. Or the 1139 if it's a corporation.
Yeah. And Jason, we definitely want to look, because if you're grabbing a loss in 2019, then we might be wise to really take a look and see what are the tax rates. The tax rates came down in 2019, right? 2018, mm-hmm. they passed the law at the end of the year and they came down. So your best bang for your buck is actually to go back and wipe out 2018, 2017, and 2016. Anyway, so we have a whole bunch of fun stuff in the COVID-19 CARES Act. They're going to add more. A lot of folks are paying attention to the loan programs, but the ability to access your retirement plan, the tax credits for employers, the payroll tax holiday where they're deferring until 2021. Those are all pretty potent, too, and can be very, very effective. But let's jump into our questions, and then I'll answer a bunch of live questions. Let's see. If I don't have W-2 income, how do I qualify as real estate professional as LP investor in real estate deals? We'll answer that. What are the tax implications of purchasing a primary residence that also has a small business at the same address? In 2017, I sold property and bought new property with a 1031 exchange. Can I sell the new property and move the gain from the original property into a qualified opportunity zone? How exactly is that handled? Interesting question, mm-hmm. by the way. That one's kind of funky, and it'll be interesting to dive into it. If I want to sell my stocks as a person with long-term profit, therefore large taxes, and then to invest these monies into my C Corp to buy property for a flip, what is the best way of action to reduce taxes? How did the Secure Act change treatment of a spousal inherited IRAs and required minimum distributions from those IRAs? Gosh, there was two questions that run. I think that when they're funneling these out, sometimes they put them side by side. I should spread them out because these are similar. I inherited an IRA from my wife who was 5 years younger than me under the, cradle robber, right? Under the Secure Act. When do I need to start withdrawing required minimum distributions from the inherited account? Do I need to start RMDs when she would have been 70 and a half or 72? Good question. And I'm sorry for the loss. I make jest. But last year was a very lucrative year, and many people have very large capital gains burdens. Now, with the current market conditions, these gains have disappeared and may cause taxpayers the inability to pay the 2019 tax bill. Yes, that's happened plenty of times. Do you have suggestions for tax management given these unusual circumstances? Absolutely. And we'll dive into those. I should have removed. My name is Bartolome, and I am from Argentina. My country does not have a double taxation treaty with the U.S. I want to invest in commercial real estate in the United States and live there. I already have a Social Security number. Is there any legal way to avoid being taxed in both country and only be in the U.S.? This is Jeff's favorite question. Why are you giving me the look?
Next lesson.
poor Jeff. I hit these. I throw them to him sometimes ahead of time. Sometimes I don't. And somebody says, do you need to file a personal extension by April 15th or July 15th? By July 15th. So you can relax, Greg. You don't have to do anything. April 15th became July 15th. So anytime you think, oh, I needed to do something by April 15th, it's really July 15th.
And actually everything that between April 15th and July 15th became July 15th.
Everything got pushed. Yeah. So you're good. All right. Can my IRA LLC invest into another JV LLC? For those of you guys who don't know this lingo, that means the IRA owns an LLC, probably to do real estate. And it's that JV is a joint venture LLC to purchase a single family home with the intention to sell once it has been remodeled. Why is there a question mark? I guess it's because it says, can my invest. All right. The other investor, the JV LLC, is an individual, not a prohibited individual. In other words, he's talking about, hey, there's prohibited people, disqualified people that you can't work with, like parents and kids and grandkids and stuff. The JV LLC will be dissolved after the sale is final. There'll be no debt involved. We'll answer that. If a person gets a substantial insurance settlement, is it taxable? I love that question. That's always an interesting answer. If it is not, can it be contributed to a Roth IRA? If it can, what are the restrictions for contributing it? All right, we'll get into that. Our employer would be willing to change part of our gross income to 1099 income. I can already hear Jeff's stomach gurgling over that sentence. We currently earn $100,000 a year gross income. If I were to set up 40 to 50 gross of that to be set up as 1099 income deposited straight into real estate holding entity to fund a future, hopefully in 2019, real estate purchase, what would be our tax advantage? Can I still file 2019 taxes to qualify for the COVID relief funds? How does this stimulus affect taxes for property owners? It's good stuff. How do we apply for relief, COVID-19, through our corporation or one of our LLCs, since we do business in our LLC name? With the 401k withdrawal penalties waived into the stimulus package, it says you need to have adverse financial consequences. What qualifies? I manage Airbnb properties under my LLC, but I don't technically pay myself. I just take distributions out. Will I qualify? I'm assuming they're talking about the CARES Act, so I'll figure out whether they're talking about loans, and we'll go over that. I didn't file 2018 or 2019, assuming taxes. I'm worried I won't get the stimulus even though I qualify. Filling out economic injury disaster loan has questions on cost of goods sold. Is that just products or all of my expenses, including payroll? As you guys can see, I take these questions literally as people write them. Sometimes we edit them up, sometimes we don't. Does the bill have provisions for unemployment compensation for those who are self-employed? These are really good questions. What are the tax implications of taking the latest COVID loan or grant from the SBA? If they forgive part of it, how is it taxed? And curious how the stimulus package can help flippers. And then you guys have a gajillion questions. Before we do that, on Saturday, I'm teaching Infinity Investing. If you've never done that workshop, come and join us. It's free because it's free. And we always go over it. It's a lot of fun. If you like taxes, then you will love Infinity Investing because it's all numbers based and a little checkup from the neck up. We have a little fun. I use a lot of history and a lot of number analysis of the most successful Americans who file taxes because they have to file in order for me to calculate their data. And then Jeff here and his team, well over 5,000 returns a year. Mm-hmm. And we look and see who's making money and what are they doing. So, you know, and then we do a little calculator and we figure out how you can finally retire. No, we don't even say retire. It's just how do you live without having to work? And that's the goal. And then how do you give that on? We rate a whole bunch of companies and we have lots of fun with that. You'll learn what dividend kings are, dividends aristocrats, and how to write and how to become a stock market landlord. So there's all sorts of fun stuff. It is absolutely free on Saturday. Please join. If you feel like you're too good for it, which is, I get it. Some of you guys are really good. Have somebody young do it. And especially if they're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, before they get into crazy debt buying liabilities, we'll teach them the difference between them and make sure it happens. So we'll make sure that they don't do anything crazy and that their eyes are open and that they live a wonderful, prosperous life buying some assets. All right, let's jump into this and then we'll answer a bunch of live questions. If I don't have W-2 income, how do I qualify as a real estate professional as an LP investor in real estate deals? Jeff.
The W-2 really doesn't have anything to do with being a real estate professional. Being a real estate professional is how much time you're spending working with your real estate activities. So if your real estate professional is a limited partner, I think by definition, a limited partner is not going to be able to be a real estate professional.
Yeah, you're passive unless. So here's the deal. There's the regs. And I have a leg up on Jeff on this because we were digging into this about a month ago. And what it is if you, the regs say that if you get more than 10% of your gross rents as a limited partner, you cannot be a real estate professional. There's an exception. You are not an LP investor if you are also a GP in that same LP. So if you guys are following, it means you'd have to be the manager of that limited partnership or on the management team. Otherwise, that LP interest is probably going to disqualify because it's considered passive. Regardless, you could have that. If there's losses being kicked out of that LP and you are a GP, then they would just treat it all as GP. And then those losses, you could still be a real estate professional. But it's you're playing with fire if all you are is an investor. You're not going to, like, you can literally disqualify all of your properties by having, and remember, this is 10% of your gross rents from all rents that end up on your tax return. So we look at it everything. And I've done this, we've done this with doctors and other folks mm-hmm. where you're actually getting down to the nitty gritty saying, here's the ones. Now, if you don't want that, that LP investor, sometimes we recommend people just make sure they're investing in LLCs because the LP is what ruins you. The LLC doesn't. So it's kind of weird. And you should be talking to your syndicators and saying, right. Hey, why are you doing this LP? You're messing me up. Stop doing that. Hey, let's answer some live questions because I'm literally onto two pages now that I have not answered. So I have to look at this. All right. Somebody says, thank you. All right. Are you qualified for a PPP? That's a Paycheck Protection Program as a sole member LLC. Tax as a sole proprietor. You're doing flips. The answer is, what do you think?
I think the answer is yes.
It is a resounding yes. Get in there and apply because by my calculation, about 4.5% of the businesses are going to get one, unless they throw a bunch more money in it. So time is a wasting. And then you can also do an EIDL, an economic injury disaster loan. And if you want us to help you, we do have a package where we will go through the ends of the earth trying to find you monies under the CARES Act, if you feel like it. We did a wonderful webinar on that. I'm sure there's a replay that we did on Saturday, but time is of the essence. All right. I'm in the middle of a 1031 exchange and my 80 day got extended July 15th from IRS notice. I see what you're saying. So I guess it affected 1031s. I had looked at that earlier and they were saying it doesn't affect 1031s.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. So if you got an extension, that's kind of news for me. So you got to be a little careful. I would actually check with your 1031 exchange facilitator. But if you are in the middle of one, I know that you have the 180-day, maybe that's what he means, got extended. I don't know about that.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, everything I've seen says that 1031 exchange were not brought in. So, James, I'd be really checking on that because everything I'm seeing, it says bad for 1031 exchanges. And I would actually be saying, if you need to go park your money, do a Delaware statutory trust or something with somebody who has investments off the shelf where you can put your money and make sure you don't have an individual.
And I was thinking just because you're in the middle of a 1031 exchange, with things being the way they are and you're expecting your income to be substantially lower, if you're expecting, maybe reconsider that 1031.
Yeah.
And maybe go ahead and pay the taxes now.
Yeah, because you might have some losses from something else. And if you have capital gain on your real estate and you have capital losses in the stock market, it might be time to dump some of those losers and offset your gain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to your accountant. All right. Having S-Corps individually and putting them together in a C-Corp, will that save me from being double taxed?
No, you can't do that.
No, C-Corp cannot own an S-Corp. It violates the S-Corp election and makes it a C-Corp. So yeah. Then you just have one big fat C-Corp, and yeah, it's double taxed. But that may not be a bad thing.
But you can combine your S-Corps and make them Q-Subs.
Yes, you can. You'd have to have one parent. If you have two, you could have one being the Q-Sub of the other. That just means qualified S-Subsidiary. I mean, it's an owner. That's actually a good thought, too. Mm-hmm. I have a QRP profit-sharing plan. I want to move it from my current broker to do investing. Can I still take loans out against this? If we move it over to our solo 401A, can we take loans out against it up to 50% like the QRP? So Sherry, do you want to answer that? Because you can give her the good news. It's 100%. And yes, you can. You can borrow up to 100% capped at $100,000 per participant. And just for giggles, the CARES Act says you could pull out $100,000 as a early distribution per participant. And as long as you pay it back by December 31st of 2022, you do not have to pay tax on that, nor do you have to pay interest. You're welcome. See, I get to feel special. I feel special now. All right. What about state taxes? I have no idea what that means. There's some random questions in here. I have a Roth IRA, but my income has increased over $100,000. How can I contribute to it now? He has a Roth IRA. He makes too much money, I think is what he's saying.
It's possible you could do a backdoor IRA.
Ooh, Jeff, explain that.
What happens is you make a non-deductible traditional IRA contribution.
Mm-hmm.
By making it non-deductible, you get basis in that contribution.
And then you roll it into
You roll it right into a Roth IRA.
Yes. Or if you really want to get twisted, if you have your own business you do a Roth 401k, and then you don't have the income limitations. All right. Confused on Section 139. That's 26 U.S.C. 139, to be exact. Specifically, must I apply through a government channel to claim relief reimbursements? Should I stop administrative office deduction so I don't double dip? I'm still considered an employee of my C-Corp, and I am not drawing a salary. So, Jeff, do you want to enlighten them on Section 139?
So for Section 139, that's a reimbursement for disaster relief.
Yes.
You should have a plan document of some type, but you don't have to contact the government or anything.
It's all you, baby.
It just has to be a presidential declared disaster, which it is for the entire nation. So,
yep.
And then, of course, document your reimbursements.
Yep. Great. Which means, yeah, you can get, you can do it. All right. Given quarterly first quarter 2020 tax estimate payment is delayed until July, will quarter one and quarter two be due essentially at the same time?
Correct.
Yes. Early withdrawal from the QRP requires that you pay the income taxes during the 3-year period. Is that correct? No. There's argument over this. We need some. I say that it says ratably over a 3-year period, and ratably does not mean pro rata. Ratably means over some time over that. So technically, you could say, I want to pay it in year one, two, or three, or all of them. And I would say, elect to pay it in year three, but then give it back, which means you have a trustee to trustee transfer in year three, which means there's no tax. See?
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff's going to give me the sly look.
No, I honestly don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, I say it's stupid for them to require that you pay tax pro rata is what they're trying to say it is. Some people are saying, oh, you spread it out evenly over 3 years. That's not what it says.
I think we're going to see further guidance, but yeah. It may be months before we see what
If you intend to pay it back, it's treated as a trustee transfer.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as taxation on a trust. It's not a 60-day rollover. It's a trustee-to-trustee transfer, which is not taxable. So if you pay it back within 3 years and that's how they treat it, there can't be a tax implication.
Right, and I think that's what makes it confusing. I have 3 years to pay it back, so am I going to start paying taxes on it in the first year?
Yeah, I would say that. So let's just say that we took some people's position and said, all right, we'll spread it out over 3 years. So we'll take $33,000 a year. Then you're going to have to file an amendment on the 2 years that you paid the tax to get it back. Somebody says, you have another call at 8:30 Eastern time. Yes, I do. Toby does podcasts and these webinars all day long because nobody knows these CARES Act and they keep grabbing us. All right. Does a withdrawal from a 457 deferred compensation count towards the 100,000? I want to take out 100 from a 403B and 70 from a 457. It does count. But what you can do, if you can take the early withdrawal and a loan, so you can get up to 200,000. And then we'll start answering some of the questions.
Now, question about the, assuming it's an employer plan when you're a W-2 employee,
mm-hmm.
Does the employer have any say on these distributions or loans?
You have to give them a document that says, and we have that in our little loan portal that says, here's the reasons why I need it. It's COVID related, that I've been damaged from the COVID virus. And it's either I'm caring for someone, I have it myself, or I've been adversely affected. And once you do that, they have to take your certification. Then they withdraw without the 20% withholding and without the 10% penalty. So does that mean that they're going to do what they're supposed to do? Quite often, these folks are hoarding your money. And I just get mad at them. All right. What are the, let's answer the ones over here. I'm actually going to make my little spotlight so you guys know when I'm actually answering a question that's in writing. What are the tax implications of purchasing a primary residence that also has a small business at the same address? Jeff, what say you?
Oh, it's going to depend on what kind of small business you're operating out of your home. If it's just a home office or something like that, you're probably being reimbursed by your company. Now, I worked with an accountant who had a large area of his home sectioned off that was his accounting office. He was probably mm-hmm. depreciating that. So that actually becomes two different properties within the same property. You have your personal residence and you have your business. Yeah.
It's like a duplex when you're doing the depreciation. So don't do the depreciation.
So, yeah, if you do have a separate operation, whatever it is, you're probably going to be depreciating part of your property and taking separate expenses for that part of the property.
Yep. And then more annoyingly, if you are a sole proprietor and you're taking a home office, you have depreciation recapture when you sell it too.
Yes.
Don't you? Yes. Yeah. So we don't want to so here's the right way to do it. Like always, have an accountable plan. That becomes your biggest friend. Is you have to have a business and it reimburses you. You don't have to report it anywhere and you don't have to worry about it. It's just a primary residence. That way you don't have to worry about it. If you do anything else, you have lease agreements or you have a home office deduction as a sole proprietor, then you're going to have tax consequences. So it's bad. I'm going to answer some more live questions because you guys are hammering us tonight. Oh, yeah. Look at this. All right. So I'm trying to stay ahead of it. It's like an avalanche coming through. You guys are all chatty Cathys tonight. All right. Do I need to file a personal tax extension? Oh, you already answered that. No, you don't have to worry about that. Even before this whole virus hit, we have a few tenants who skipped town early on their lease. So the total amount of this case, for example, including the 2-month penalty for breaking the lease, is $3,300. What do we do in order to have to be able to claim it as a loss on our taxes? You never recognized it as income. So
right. You can expense that portion of the money to try that you paid to try to collect it, but lost revenue is not deductible.
Yes. For real estate professionals, should the flipping rehab S-Corp be aggregated with the rental LLC for purposes of meeting the hours test? So you're flipping properties in the LLC. So the aggregation is actually for the material participation. The hours test is a different test. It's still under 469C7, but you don't have to worry about the aggregation affecting. What they look at for your hours is, do you own at least, 5% of the business? And are you engaged in those? Like, technically, if I am spending the time doing the activity, construction, development, or et cetera, then I meet the 750 hours. Then whether I materially participate on my properties is a whole separate test.
Right. You don't want to aggregate your flips in with your rental properties, though.
Right, because then you'd have a bad situation. But you would never do that. This is just your investment properties. Your flips are an active trader business, right?
Yep.
For additional amount that can be taken out of a solo 401k, do you have to prove you've been affected? Or can you, on the loan, you don't have to prove that you've been affected by the coronavirus to take the loan, only on the early distribution. Somebody says, how do we check on the SBA website to see if we've been approved? It depends on what you're looking for. On the EIDL, they send out a little, there should actually be a link there that says status of your loan, use your loan number. Somebody says, not hearing much from Jeff, at least he's funny and interesting. See, they troll me. I'm a beginning real estate investor since late last year. I have not closed a deal, but I spent marketing dollars and monies on software tools to help me research properties. I do not have an entity established. Can I still qualify for EIDL since seller appointments and the like have significantly fallen off? He hasn't closed a deal and he's not an entity.
I don't think he's got any interest.
Yeah, I don't think you have anything yet. You're not even a business yet. So you have to be a small business. I don't see how you'd qualify. Sorry. That's almost always why we're setting up a business. Have they promulgated the rules for qualified retirement plans, loans? Where can I find the rules and terms? They issued it in the CARES Act. All they did is they changed the 50% to 100%. And they changed the 50% of your, the $50,000 to $100,000. So they literally just edited the existing law. Saw your webinar on the CARES Act and what is available. It looks like there is nothing for a trading business structured LP managed by a corp can do. Do you agree? It's tough. So there's some things out there, like if you wanted to go for regular financing. But if you have a trading account, I'm just going to give you one that I've used successfully in the past. And it's called a security-backed line of credit. And if you have a blue chip account where like you have a good size amount in there of blue chip companies, they will loan you on that as security and give you a line of credit that you can use. And it's usually LIBOR plus a small, like a 0.5%, 75 basis points, thereabouts. It's pretty cheap money. And so you may want to talk to your brokerage firm about that. And do you have anything on that one?
No, I was just wondering if they're paying a management fee or a guaranteed payment to a corporate member, corporate partner, if they stop making those payments, could the corporation have any kind of argument?
I know what you're saying. And we had that discussion with a bunch of Portman, and they said the manager's the one who has the claim of right, and then they could pass it down to the assets that are being managed by the LLC. So I guess technically you could say, hey, we're struggling and we're going to lose our revenue, but it's not a payroll. It's not payroll. It would be the EIDL.
Yeah, right.
EIDL is a loan. So even though they say, hey, there's 10,000 that could be free, at the end of the day, it's a 30-year loan to 3.75%. Can I transfer the deed of my timeshare as a gift to a nonprofit? Yes. All right, let's jump on. All right, in 2017, I sold property and bought new property with a 1031 exchange. Can I sell the new property and move the gain from the original property into a qualified opportunity zone? How exactly is that handled? Wow.
So you bought a new property with a 1031 exchange. Yeah, you could turn around and sell that property.
Well, so here's the deal. And this is where it gets weird. Qualified opportunity zone requires capital gains to fund it.
And it's got to be long-term capital gains, correct?
Yeah, it just has to be qualified. Okay. It just has to be a capital gain. So it could be short-term or long-term. And so the qualified opportunity zone is where you invest in something, you defer your taxes, you pay your taxes on that gain on the original amount after 6 years, because I think that's the longest period of time we have before they make you pay it. You're going to have a step up in basis, 10%. So you're going to pay 90% of that gain. And then so long as you own the property in the qualified opportunity zone, you meet all their little tests, you pay no tax until 2047 or something like that, where you'll have a step up in 2047. So you don't pay any tax on any of the gain anytime soon. The problem is you need to have capital gains.
Right.
And so if you 1031 exchange, the only amount is if you sell that, you're going to have to pay tax on the gain of the original property that you sold in 1031 exchanged. So the first property you sold rolls into the 1031. That basis is now your new basis. And so you're going to pay tax on whatever that gain is. And you got to make sure. It gets crazy.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it's wild.
So I love these types of questions where you start digging into them and it makes you go, So I'd have to run the numbers on it, but I'd be looking at it saying, all right, what was the original property? You bought something in 2017. So if it's like pretty much not much huge amounts of gain, maybe we do it. If it's a lot of gain, maybe we don't. And the other thing is, do you have a bunch of losses in the stock market right now? Dump your stocks. Don't pay any tax. You know, you could roll your capital gains on that other one and push it out farther, mm-hmm. I imagine. All right. If I want to sell my stocks as a person with long-term profit, therefore large taxes, well, it's up to 20% plus net investment income tax at 3.8 plus your state tax. That'd be the max. So the maximum I think you'd ever pay is about 38%. Otherwise, you're probably talking, you could be as low as 0, 15, 20. But anyway, so he sells this and then invests into a C Corp to buy property for a flip. What is the best way to reduce taxes?
Now, this one really stumped me, because if he wants to sell a portfolio of stock and put all of that proceeds into that C Corporation, he's going to have to pay tax.
Yep.
You can't carry back losses or I could not come up with a way to do this.
Yep. So the only way you're going to be able to do it and avoid tax is if you sell something that has losses to offset the gain. If your income is below, let's say you're married filing jointly and you're keeping below the $80,000 with your standard deduction or whatever your deductions are, your long-term capital gains rate would be zero. If you are putting that C Corp in a qualified opportunity zone and it qualifies, then you're going to get at least a 6-year deferral. And then you won't have tax on any of that growth. So if you're buying properties for a flip and you're in an opportunity zone, that you might be able to avoid it. The only other thing is if you're, depending on the type of activity you're doing, if this is for low to moderate income housing, then maybe you set up, instead of doing a C Corp, you do a 501c3. If that's what you're going to do, you're going to help out people who are moderate income. Doesn't mean low income, but it's low to moderate. So normal families. Mm-hmm. Then I could give the stocks to my nonprofit right off the fair market value. And sell the stocks, pay zero tax, have all the money in there.
Right.
But then to get the money out, I'm going to be paying myself a salary or something. Like there's ways. But the simplest way is going to cost you tax. That's the thing. That's how taxes usually are. All right, let's go to some live questions. I have a JV LLC with two other partners for the purpose of fixing and flipping a house. Each partner is listed as an individual. Should I assign my piece to my C Corp? I want the profit or loss to go through the C Corp rather than me. Yes.
No.
If you're flipping, you don't want that hitting you personally. I have a 401k with my W-2 job and do not see the 100,000 load cash distribution. Two options from the CARE Act. Are employers legally obligated to provide these per the CARES Act, or is it optional? Technically, it's your money. So it's up to your plan documents, but I believe what they're looking for is a hardship loan. So when I look at the documents, and I was looking at TD Ameritrade's yesterday, they have a hardship where that's where you'd put it. And you'd say, here's the reason I want the distribution, then you'd take it out. But that's your money. You're allowed to take the money out if you want. It's just the administrator, the folks that are managing that money are the ones that are have requirements to do withholdings unless you tell them it's under the CARES Act and here's why I need it. Is there a relation between taking an EIDL loan, an economic injury disaster loan, for business while on the other end investing other personal money in real estate deals or syndication? Do you want to do
that? I'm not sure that they're really related. I don't think anybody's going back and looking at what you have personally and why aren't you contributing that to your businesses.
And Jeff is 100% correct. So what you use the EIDL for is very different. You have to use it for your operations. You cannot pay yourself a distribution or give yourself a bunch of money out of the EIDL loan. You can't use it for the same reason you have a PPP loan if you have that too. Your other money is your money, so you can do whatever you want with it. The deadline for Roth IRA contributions is April 15th or July 15th. It is July 15th. Can a real estate broker pay commissions directly to a C Corp, or does it have to be written out to the agent first?
I think that's going to be dependent upon state law. A lot of states will not let you pay commissions directly to a non-licensed broker.
Yep, it's up to your state. And what you do, so there's a case that came out, the Fitzgerald, gosh, I'm blanking on it at the time. I think it is Fitzgerald. So he was a financial broker, did securities, and he wanted it to go to his S-Corp. And so he would just deposit the checks. He'd endorse them and deposit in the S-Corp. And the IRS said, no, you can't do that. And they were right for him because he didn't have a contract and he never let the employer know. So what they came out of it is said, well, if you let your employer know and say that you are working on behalf of a company and all of your actions with this particular company, where you're getting the check, so your broker, all of that is on behalf of the company, and then you have an agreement with the company, you get to keep it inside the corporation. So the answer is, even if you're state laws say, hey, I can't pay an entity, you could still get it in there and treat it as tax to the entity if you want to. And then you don't have to ask permission. Somebody says, I signed up for the workshop. Yay. Refi with cash out, then use house for business purpose, or still do short-term. Is it good to go down the road? I don't know what she said. Sometimes I have no idea. So I did a refi with a cash out, and then I used the house for a business purpose. Is short-term rental still a good down the road? So Susie, pull the money out of the house. Just know that that is no longer a permissible use for your home finance. So if this is your personal residence, you're going to have to make sure that you're writing the expense off, the interest, as an investment loan. If you're doing it for short term, the Airbnb stuff, there's still a market for it. I think mm-hmm. that all the hotels and everybody's going to suffer for a while. But could you still do it? Absolutely. I'm not going to tell you not to. Just know that when you rent for 7 days or less, it's active income. And so we suggest you use a corporation as the host, like with Airbnb, and that you rent the house long to the host. So generally speaking, I'd have rental properties in an LLC, and I would lease it on a monthly basis to my corporation, which will in turn lease it on a 2 or 3 day period mm-hmm. and pay me rent. So I am an investor and I can take all that depreciation and offset all my income. And I don't have to worry about active income, Social Security. All right. What time is the webinar on Saturday? It's a wonderful live stream at 9 to 5 Pacific Standard Time. And that's the Infinity Investing. If nobody knows what that is, Patty or Susie or Susan can maybe put that in the chat so everybody has access to it. It's really fun. I've been teaching it for years. They did the Hawaii Convention Center. We were in on Bourbon Street or right off of Bourbon Street in New Orleans. We've taught them in a bunch of cool places, and it's fun. All right, FYI, I received the EIDL today. Wow, 1,000. So Tiana, you got the money. If you don't mind, what day did you apply for that disaster loan? Just let me know so we can help. Because I have people that we did the EIDL right up, like even before the passage of the CARES Act, we didn't request it, and they were all ready. We sat on it until it passed, and then we did the request, and we did the paper application, and then electronically we went in and applied even on that Saturday and Sunday, and we still haven't seen those monies. So it's always interesting. So if you're willing to share that, could you let us know what date it was that you filed for the EI DL? If you have a C-Corp and LLCs, no. However, no expense, how do we still qualify for the COVID fund? Somebody says, so if I have an LLC and a corporation, could I still apply for the EIDL is what it really comes down to. And it's going to be tough to prove your expenses.
Right.
But if you're in the middle of a rehab, for example, and you have a postponement, then you would just show them the month before whatever it was that you were trying to do the rehab and how much it was costing and your projections, and you could make an argument. And just remember, in that case, no employees, you're not going to get the emergency advance, but you'll get a loan, and it's a 30-year loan at 3.75%. And then there's also, what if we're behind filing our personal taxes for 2017 and 2018? Somebody says, hey, I heard Social Security will still get their $1,200.
So Social Security, they've decided to mine the Social Security files, and everybody who signed up for Social Security is going to get a stimulus check.
So they don't
have it should be direct deposit in that same account.
Yep. And they don't have to file the 1040 because a lot of people are below. They're not. Right. They don't have any income. I have an LLC set up as a C Corp. What? Oh, yeah. OK. That issues W-2 payroll. I need to the PPP to do. I am only one employee. Yes, Autumn, you would actually qualify. And it would be 2.5 times your average monthly payroll, mm-hmm. with the payroll amount capped. And that includes, by the way, the payroll itself is capped at $100,000 of annual income. So $8,333 a month. But it also, you'd add on health benefits or retirement plans too. We had a client with a DB that actually became very relevant for. It's not part of the 100. So they put in $150,000, $200,000 a year to their DB plan, and it became, hey, we could still get you a pretty sizable amount so you can continue to make contributions to payroll and things. All right. Can I purchase a fourplex property and being owned by LLC after the purchase of the property? Yes. Let's see. How did the Secure Act change treatment of spousal inherited IRAs and required minimum distributions from those IRAs?
This question's actually really easy.
It did.
The Secure Act didn't change anything that had anything to do with spousal inherited IRAs.
Correct. You are an exception to all these new rules under the Secure Act. It says, hey, all these changes, the only thing that affected you was your required minimum distributions, which, by the way, you don't have to take for 2020, mm-hmm. but they don't start until you're 72. And here's another question on that. I inherited an IRA from my wife, who was 5 years younger than me. Under the Secure Act, when do I need to start withdrawing required minimum distributions from the inherited account? Do I need to start withdrawing RMDs when she would have been 70 and a half or 72?
No, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I'm thinking if she has not started collecting, it's going to be based on his age, not hers.
Correct. That's absolutely right. It's based off of his age. If she had started, then it's going to be the longer, I believe, of her life expectancy or his, right?
Correct, as far as computing what those RMDs are.
Yeah. So this is where it's beneficial for you if you're younger and you're below 59 and a half and your wife, before she passed, was over that age, then you could actually qualify for early distributions too without the penalty. But that gets really fun. Somebody's already asking, Did your slide stop or did my screen freeze? See, they weren't giving me heat, but we're going to make fun of you anyway. No, it's whatever I get the live questions, I tend to just read. See, Jeff's really interesting. They're still trolling me. Oh, my goodness. You're not the only one. They're just not very nice. All right. Last year was a very lucrative year, and many people, and I hope you share that, by the way. There's some people really suffering right now. Last year was a very lucrative year, and many people have very large capital gains burdens. Yes, because the market was doing great. And then it crashed. Now, with all the current market conditions, those gains have disappeared and may cause taxpayers the inability to pay the 2019 tax bills. Do you have suggestions for tax management given these unusual circumstances?
Yikes.
That's great advice, Jeff.
Yeah, like we were talking about earlier. I mean,
when the CPA says yikes, you're hosed.
If you have gains in 19 and losses in 20, those losses in 20 don't help you at all for 19. You can't carry them back.
You can't
offset other losses.
No, you just carry them forward and then hope you make money in the future that you don't have to pay taxes on.
Right.
Here's what you do, though. Don't sell your stock. Every stat that we've seen, other than the AIDS epidemic, within 6 months, the S&P is in positive territory. Zika, Ebola, swine flu, Hong Kong flu, all of them. Within 6 months, the S&P was up. So here's what you do. Nothing.
I had a client in 2001. After 9/11, the market was closed for, 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite. Well, it was...
It was a long time. But the day the market reopened, she sold everything and took a...
massive loss.
Took a whooping.
Here's the funny one. Okay, so this isn't... I shouldn't say this is funny, but when the tech bubble hit, we had all these people that were going out there, and there was a CPA, Pied Piper of traders, saying, everybody file for trader status and make a mark-to-market election. And what that means is that you get to pay tax whether you sell your stock or not. And I remember this like yesterday, all these people coming in going, my stocks are worth less than the tax on them because they were forced to pay tax on these companies that ran up in December and then popped in March, right before tax season.
And I'm going to get on my soapbox about this because what we saw, especially in 2001 with the tech bubble crash, a lot of people, especially older people, in totally wrong asset allocations.
Yeah.
That lost a great portion of their retirement money.
And we're still battling the fiduciary. If you've ever seen me talk at a convention, you've seen me rail on this. The fiduciary responsibility. So I live in a state in Nevada where you cannot be financial advisor without being a fiduciary. And it's very different than most states. Most states, and people wouldn't think about it for Nevada, but you want to have a fiduciary. These brokers will just allocate your stuff. And it just has to be suitable. And they get away with really hosing people over. So that makes me very upset. They're the same ones that bought all this stuff. Anyway, you won't get into it. I get all cranky. All right, I am from Argentina. Diego Maradona, the phantom punch or whatever that is. My country does not have double tax or double treaty. Basically, it doesn't have a tax treaty with the U.S. And I want to invest in commercial real estate and I want to live there. I already have a social security number. Is there any legal way to avoid being taxed to both countries? Yes, you moved to the U.S. So U.S. is the only, there's two countries on the planet that tax you based off of where you're a citizen of. U.S. is one of them. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is some little island someplace. Every place else, it's where you're a resident of. So if you live here, you don't have to pay taxes in Argentina.
See, and he says he has a social security number. Now, I know it might be a taxpayer identification number, but if he's got a social security number, he's a resident.
Yeah,
he's a green card holder.
He was a green card holder, right? So he came here either on a visa or something else. But and by getting that, by the way, you are taxed even when you live in Argentina on all the Argentina money too. Mm-hmm. Like the U.S. says, oh, hey,
right.
If you're a resident here, we're gonna tax you on all of it. But the other way is you use a C corp and you don't pay the tax. You let the corporation pay the tax. So it depends. You use the numbers and we calculate it. There's a few times like Canadians, I like the C Corp because Canada just hammers the hell out of them. If you've ever seen Tax Wise, you've seen me do the every time you're mad about taxes, just remember Canada and then it makes you smile. Their tax freedom day is June 15th, which means they work half the year to pay their government. We love Canadians. Trudeau's you know, he's a nice guy, right? Somebody's giving me more heat. Oh, I have to get on to something here. All right. Can my, somebody's reminding me that I have other obligations. Can my IRA LLC invest in another JV LLC to purchase a single family home with the intention to sell once it's been remodeled? The other investor in the JV LLC is an individual, not a prohibited person. So we know that we're not dealing with disqualified people. We have an IRA flipping a house with somebody else. There's no debt involved. Is it a prohibited transaction? What are the tax implications?
It's not a prohibited transaction. You can certainly do this. The only problem with this is you're flipping, and flipping is business income. So your IRA is going to end up paying tax on any profits under the UBIT.
You're not going to pay any, right? Hmm? I've never seen you don't think a UBIT would hit a IRA when they're just a passive person. Like, they can't participate in the remodel, right? And I've never seen it hit. So when the IRA is passive, I think you're okay. Where you get into issues is when the IRA is actually, like, if you as the owner are picking up a hammer, you're toast. You've just violated the IRA, even if it's on behalf of the JV LLC. So as long as you're just sitting back there, it's just non-tax to you. You're getting a K-1. And I would make sure I clipped passive, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you want to make this look as much as investment income as possible.
Yeah.
And not business income.
Yep.
But if, you know, like, we've looked everywhere for any case law on UBIT for flipping, and we've still never seen one. It doesn't mean it won't happen, but we would love it if the IRS would someday take that up and just know. Because some people say, oh, it's 6, it's 5, it's 4, it's 3. You know, basically nobody's ever looked at it. All right, here's a good one. If a person gets a substantial insurance settlement, is it taxable?
Assuming that it's life insurance, no, it's never taxable.
Mm-hmm. If it is not, can it be contributed to a Roth IRA?
It cannot be contributed directly to a Roth IRA. It doesn't even qualify as earned income to make you eligible to contribute to an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are eligible to contribute to any kind of IRA, part of that money, up to $7,000, can be contributed.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to get to put $500,000 into that Roth IRA.
No. But it also has to be active income, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. You're going to have active income.
Yeah. So even if you get the money from the insurance and it's in a life insurance settlement, for example, then you wouldn't put the insurance money in. You're putting in other money and you're just covering your expenses with your insurance money. You have to have active income to do the Roth. But let's assume that it's not life insurance. Let's say that it is an insurance settlement because you sued somebody because you got hit by a car.
Okay.
These are the ones I love.
I know what you're getting at, especially if it has to do with lost wages due to the accident. Can that be classified as earned income?
Yes, it gets even worse. If you have attorney's fees, so you have to sue somebody, they're taxable too. You have to pay tax on it, then you have to give it to your lawyer who also has to pay tax on it. So they try to get creative in some of these settlements now. If you receive money for anything other than bodily harm, it chances are it's taxable. So monetary awards, any interest that you get, punitive damages, those are taxable. Lost wages, taxable. Mm-hmm. Lost profits, taxable. Emotional distress, taxable. Civil rights damages, taxable. Patent, taxable. Copyright, taxable. Attorney's fees, taxable. Settlement of pension rights, you sue under ERISA. Oh, yeah, I get a bunch of money. Taxable.
Yeah.
But if I break my leg, not taxable. Bodily harm, not taxable. So those are the only ones I know of. I'm always like, if you're going to settle something out with an insurance, it better be for some serious pain that you suffer.
Hurt yourself first.
Yeah. Let's see.
We're going off board.
W-2 income as a federal employee with a thrift savings plan. Can I borrow or withdraw those funds under COVID? I'm 57 years old. Yes, you can. A thrift savings plan, what is that?
That's the government.
Yeah.
That's the federal government.
But is that a forfeit? I don't even know.
More like a 401k than anything.
Yeah.
A 457.
Is it 457?
Yeah.
I believe it is. I'm going to say a 403b or 457. I can't remember. I'm going to say that yes, but check with your administrator. Because I believe that it's falling in the categories, and it's much broader than what I laid out. It's actually any qualified plan underneath the specific chapter in the code. And when you go in there, it's pretty much anything that's not an IRA.
I try to be careful with, like, these federal plans because you often see carve-outs. mm-hmm. for these plans, that they're not included in certain definitions.
Well, that's why I would talk to the administrator right. sometimes. That can I pay high interest personal loan with a low interest EIDL loan? Not a personal loan, but for the business you can. Normal operating expenses. So yeah, so if you have expenses that are related to that business on a high interest rate, yes. Is there a credit score problem with the EIDL loan? Yeah, they can look at your personal credit, but they cannot, under the EIDL, under 200,000, they can't do collateral or personal guarantees. All right, let's go back to the live one. Where's my little dot? There it is. All right, our employer would be willing to change part of our gross income to 1099 income. This is where I said you were having stomach issues. Mm-hmm. We currently earn 100,000. Why are you having stomach issues right here, by the way?
I'm not sure why we want to do this.
If you're an employee, you're an employee. If you're getting paid as an employee for X, and then they say, I'm going to split it up, you can't do that. You can't get paid as an employee in a 1099 for the same work. If you are an employee and they say, hey, I want you to do some work after hours building cabinets here or doing carpet or cleaning or fill in the blank, something that is not part of your job title, then they can 1099 you. What they can't do is say, hey, how about I just 1099 you on part of this and others? You have so many issues there, but not the least of which is something called 199A, where they specifically said you cannot change income from W-2 to 1099 unless you have a valid reason to do that.
And actually, the employer is at risk here because mm-hmm. there's a good chance that the IRS is going to come back, reclassify them as an employee. They're hot on that trail.
Yep, and then they would assess both of you guys, even if the 1099 paid their self-employment tax, they still hit the employer. So yep. It's always fun. Can I still file 2019 taxes to qualify for the COVID relief funds? So maybe you made too much in 2018.
If you didn't file 2019 and you filed 2018 and you...
I have too much money on 2018, so I'm not going to qualify.
And you're just looking for the stimulus check.
Yeah.
You're fine.
Yep, you could file it.
But yeah, I'm not sure exactly how this is going to look. The stimulus checks aren't set to expire until the end of the year. So I think they're going to be looking at this as ongoing.
Yeah, and it's an advance rebate to 2019. So it's this weird tax credit thing where, no, you're not paying tax on it. No, you don't pay more, pay less.
They did this a number of years ago. They gave everybody an extra $400, was it?
Tax credit, so it's not taxable.
Right, and then decided the next year whether or not you should have gotten it.
Yeah. Somebody says, can you clarify a backdoor IRA? Do you pay taxes on that? You pay taxes when it goes into the IRA. And then since you didn't pay taxes on it, you can roll that right into a 401k.
Right. So you're not going to be deducting this IRA anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Somebody else asked, let's see, where's my exchange 45-day window is extended through July 15th, but my 180-day close window is still the same. Thank you very much. All right. So the 45-day on our 1031 exchange.
The identification. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for giving that. I didn't know that the 45-day was extended. I knew the 180. I think I knew that wasn't, and I was freaking me out.
And that kind of makes sense. They don't want people mm-hmm. going out looking for properties.
You can't. They pretty much have you toast. 1031's got extended to July 15th was from a California official. You got to be a little careful, because that's California and that's not federal law. And then IRS notice 2023 or 2020-23 has info on 1031. So we'll take a look at that. So maybe we have it. If we find something, it says, though the nudity looks like written into this notice, extends the 45 or 180-day deadline that between. All right, so we'll take a look at it. It looks like they may have extended it. There's a few people saying that they extended it under the 1031. So what we need to do is email that in, and that way we can read over the notice. There's a few of them that came out in the last couple of days, and we can look at it. Our stock market trading loss is still limited to $3,000 a year. No, it's the $3,000 is against active income. If you have other losses, like if you have losses and you have other income, then it offsets the income. So capital losses offset capital gains first, then your ordinary active income up to 3,000.
And I think it's been that way since the early 60s.
Yep. I am 59 and a half and I'm eligible for a 401k withdrawal. I take the $100,000 loan out before under the COVID rules. How will that be treated to pay back, or should I wait to withdraw and pay taxes? What is the best strategy? Being 59.5, it just means you don't have the 10% penalty. It would still be taxable. So I would borrow the money out, and I don't have to pay tax on it. Like, if you want to pay taxes, you go. You could just distribute the monies back out. You pay it back, distribute the monies out as you go. So you could pay it back and then just take that money out, pay tax on it whenever you take it out. That would be the best way. I'm an old pension parked at the county I used to work for, never became vested, so I'd like to move it somewhere. If I want to move it, could I be a self-directed IRA? Sharon, yes, you could either do it into a 401k or roll it into a solo 401k or self-directed IRA. If you're going to do real estate, I'd tell you it's much easier to be the administrator under your plan and not have a custodian. So depending on how much it is and how active you're going to be, I'd probably do a 401k. Plus, it's not subject to UBIT or unrelated debt finance. Excuse me, not unrelated debt financing. It's not subject to unrelated debt financing. There we go. So IRAs cannot borrow money and not pay tax. A 401k can borrow money on real estate, not pay tax. All right. How does the stimulus affect taxes for property owners? Doesn't really.
No.
Not that I've seen. So there's nothing in the CARES Act that really seems to affect taxes for property owners that I've seen. The really nothing more. It didn't touch SALT limitations. The only thing that affected is the technical correction of qualified improvement property. So if you fixed up a property that was a part of a leasehold or you just improved it, you could actually do the accelerated depreciation on that portion. It's classified as 15-year property.
And we've been waiting on that correction for over 2 years.
Yep.
The other thing that does affect is we talked about that NOL carryback. If you're a real estate professional, you would have active losses that you might be able to carry back now. Mm-hmm. So if you had substantial losses in 19 or 18 and you're a real estate professional, you may want to look at carrying those losses back to earlier years.
Mm-hmm. I like it. All right. How do we apply for relief, COVID-19, through our corporation or one of our LLCs since we do business in our LLC's name? So there's two major plans under the CARES Act. There's paycheck protection programs and EIDLs, mm-hmm. economic injury disaster loans. Under the paycheck protection program, they waived affiliation rules. Under the EIDL, they did not. So if you were to apply for relief under the PPP, you're looking for wherever you have payroll. If you do not have payroll, but you have the properties themselves, then I would have each LLC that owns property. It would actually, the PPP would make no sense unless you had active income. So it'd have to be something where you actually paid a salary, or if it was a sole proprietor, like an independent contractor where it was getting paid and it was going on to a Schedule C. I don't see that as the situation, although it could be one of your LLCs, depending on what it does. But the EIDL, you would just literally pick one. And this is an area for confusion, because you have one entity pick up all of the revenue. You treat it as one big consolidated unit because you are the owner in all of them. And it doesn't have to be a 50%. It is literally, you don't have to be an owner. If you control or have veto rights, then you're part of an affiliated group and they lump them all together. So under this scenario, you have a corporation, you have other LLCs. If you have control over those, even through the corporation, if it's you at the end of the day that's pulling the trigger on things or can veto things, then you do one EIDL and you list all those, at least one business there, and you list yourself as the owner, and they're going to track it by your social. That's what they told us. And we've confirmed that with several SBA agents. At the end of the day, if you are on multiple applications as a 20% or greater, they toss the applications. They literally said they will pull them and toss them because you are an affiliated group. You're on multiple entities. You should be doing one filing.
So to your point, if I have a partnership and an S corp and a Schedule C, and
you got to be careful. You got to each do any owner that's greater than 20% or has the ability to have veto power needs to do their own and only show up on one application. They said they go by the owners, and if you show up on two, they yank them both. Don't shoot the messenger, guys. We asked this by multiple people. Let's see, with 401k withdrawal penalties waived under the stimulus package, says you need to have adverse financial consequences. What qualifies?
That's everything from I have COVID, I'm aiding somebody with COVID. The big one that's going to affect most people is I need financial relief because of COVID, because I've suffered damages.
It's a certification that you say, hey, it's hurt me, and they take your word for it, and they have to. So we don't has everybody been impacted by it pretty much adversely? Yeah. If you need the money, chances are you were adversely impacted by it. If you don't need the money, then don't take it. And don't lie either. Like, if you've been profiting as a result of this, then this isn't for you. This is for people that need funds. And the government created a little law that says, hey, if you've been hurt, then don't worry. EIDLs, you're also having to be impacted. So it's the same thing. You're in a disaster area and you've suffered adverse consequences. So it's not just, hey, I feel like getting it. Let's see. I manage Airbnb properties under my LLC, but I don't technically pay myself. I just take distributions. Will I qualify? So the answer is, if you manage Airbnb and you're getting Schedule C income, it matters where this goes. If it's Schedule C income, then you would qualify for both the EIDL and the PPP loans under the CARES Act. If you're taking that money and you're misclassifying it, let's say you manage the properties, you don't own them, then there's only one way to be doing that, and that's as a Schedule C. But if you don't, you're just taking it somehow, some way as a Schedule E, and you're treating it like, hey, I own the house, and I'm just, even though I manage it, I own it, so I'm treating it as a passive activity, you may want to go back in and refile your previous year's return, because that, if you are 7 days or less, you're an active business, period. So if you're Airbnb-ing it, the average is about 4 days. Chances are you are an active. I know I'm way over. Bad Toby. I didn't file 2018 or 2019. I'm worried I won't get the stimulus, even though I qualify.
So as we talked about before, if you're on Social Security, you're going to get it. I think it's probably going to take slightly longer, but you'll get it. If you don't have to file a tax return, there is a website, IRS website. I believe it's called Non-Filers. Look up Non-Filer Stimulus Check, and you'll see that where you can enter your information. And it asks for some basic information, banking information, your address, your name, Social Security number, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If you are required to file a tax return and have not filed 2018 or 2019, I suggest you get something filed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you need to jump on it, even if it's like, they even have like a simple return, right? They have a,
yeah, and that's kind of what they're doing for the non-filers, is a simple return. I'm not sure that you can do it if you have other filing requirements and just have not filed your tax return.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, there's a bunch of questions coming in. You guys, it's crazy. Somebody says, can a QRP be a Roth? Yeah, it can be a Roth 401k. Could you roll a traditional into a Roth to take advantage of some of the bad stuff that's going on? Yeah, absolutely. If you think that your taxes are going to be lower this year than when you retire, that's what you do. I had my first employee on January 1st, 2020. Do I qualify for PPP? And the answer is yes. So, Wendy, they have a special deal for you. As long as you are in business by February 15th, you qualify. And they would use the average income between January and February that you paid that employee. 401k took a loan, want to convert it to a distribution. I believe that you just classify the amounts as distributions by not paying them.
Right.
And have
a 1099-R issued to you.
Yep. You'd want to make sure that if you're the person that you're letting your accountant know to issue that out. Do I have to be the trustee in order to transit my money without taxation? No. So you can go right to the administrator. You can go right to the trustee. Or if you are the trustee, it's easy. So if you have your own 401k, it's really easy.
But they are considering these distributions and rollovers as trustee to trustee, correct?
So if you pay it back within 3 years, it's treated as a trustee to trustee transfer. So it's not considered a 60-day rollover. So for example, if you've done a rollover this year and you say, and your accountant says, no, you can't do that early withdrawal because you can't have more than one in a year, they're missing it. It's a trustee to trustee transfer. It's not underneath that. And the IRS actually gave us some guidance on that. I believe I remember reading it somewhere, but I know that that's what the rule is too. Filling out the EIDL, under the CARES Act, which the EIDL that's normal is SBA. Again, hurricane hits your house, messes you up, and you have a disaster. You'd still do an EIDL with the SBA. Here, it's a special program where they're giving you that $10,000 emergency grant. And it says it has a question on cost of goods sold. Is that just products or all of my expenses, including payroll?
So cost of goods sold, by its very definition, is any costs incurred to produce goods or services. For example, in my accounting firm, my cost of goods sold is just payroll. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're producing a product, it's going to be the cost to produce that product. We talked about rentals, like your the short-term rentals and all. Your cost of goods sold would be most of your expenses mm-hmm. in those cases.
Your payroll can be part cost of goods sold right. if it's you doing a service, so like if you're doing construction and things like that. Otherwise, I know that we're lumping a lot in with the rental folks. Mm-hmm. And then would you lump in payroll if you were doing flips?
I think it would depend on what that payroll is for. If it was more of an administrative person, probably not. Mm-hmm. If it was somebody who was actually putting sweat into the project, yeah, I probably would.
Okay. Here's another one. And by the way, I'm looking at the times that the questions are coming in. We're at 3:34 right now. Like, there's so many questions. So we're not going to be able to get to any more that you guys are asking tonight. If I utilize Section 121 via S-Corp structure to save $500,000 capital gains, is worth it if you are not going to sell your house? Absolutely. So what he's talking about here is under Section 121, I can avoid taxation on, if I'm married, up to $500,000 of capital gains. If I lived in it as my primary residence two of the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And what you do is if I'm going to take that primary residence and make it into a rental property, I can do that and I could step up the basis by selling it to an S-Corp that I own. And those of you guys who know that everybody says, oh, don't ever own property in an S-Corp unless you're going to keep it till you're dead. If you don't plan to sell it, then that's the exception. And what you're doing is you're selling it there so you get your exclusions. Let's say I bought it for $200 and now it's worth $700. And if ordinarily you would just turn it into a rental, you're going to have $200,000 of, minus the land, you'd have depreciable asset of maybe $150,000. But we want to step up that basis because we may sell it some other time inside the S-Corp and buy something else. But we want the $700,000 basis. So we sell it to the S-Corp for up to $700,000, I'd have zero tax. I'd take an installment note back. So the S-Corp is going to pay me back as it rents it. But I'm not going to opt out of the installment method. I'm just going to treat it as a taxable event in year one, and I'm going to take the 121 exclusion. I have mm-hmm. zero tax that way. Zero, and I have a new basis of $500,000 or $700,000 minus the land. Let's say the land's up to $100,000 now. I'm depreciating $600,000. So there's a good chance that I'm not going to pay any tax on any of the rents for a long time. And if I'm really if I really know my stuff, I might cost segregate that house and bonus depreciate some of it and take a $200,000 loss in year one. And if you didn't follow me, do tax-wise. I teach that very deal.
Have you had anybody ask you, can I do that, but have the S Corporation rent the house back to me so I can still live there?
You'd have to pay it. And I always look at that going, why are you doing that? That's weird. I suppose you could. Does the bill have provisions for unemployed compensation for those who are self-employed?
Yes, it does.
Yep. It's the federal. And then they say, hey, states, you dole it out. It's $600 a week. So what I've been telling my clients is, hey, if you're paying your people less than $30 an hour and you don't need them because you've been shut down, let them get unemployment. They're mm-hmm. getting the same amount that you'd be paying them. Because these guys it was like a big thing on the news. Oh, they're still paying their employees and blah, blah, blah. And I'd be looking at them like, why? Why are you doing that? You pay into FUTA and SUTA all these years, and then when you need it, you don't use it? Come on. So the federal government is on top of your state adding $600 a week, and some of the states are giving out $200, $300, $400. Anyway, drives me crazy. And they're making it like you have to fall on the sword. It's like, no, staying in business, stay in business. Give those people a job when they come back. Don't beat yourself up because the press is telling you to do it and somehow rewarding you for doing things that don't make sense. We pay these things and it's our tax dollars. This is not Congress doing us a favor, guys. Mm-hmm. Congress is, we pay that money and they're giving it to people because there's going to be huge unemployment because they shut us all down. I don't even want to get into the constitutionality, but we have a governor here that, you know, you couldn't even, a doctor couldn't even prescribe certain medications because they said, oh, they're not tested enough. FDA approved them, but they wanted them in the hospitals only. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. These guys are just gone power, psycho power hungry. Anyway, not to get into that. All right. Does the bill, Jeff, you're setting me off. Dang it. All right. We got to get rolling through this. What are the tax implications of taking the latest COVID grant or grants from the SBA? If they forgive part of it, how is it taxed? That's the good news. It's not. It's forgiven, but you don't have to pay tax on it. It's specifically excluded under the CARES Act. So you can relax. And guys, we have a whole bunch of questions and I'm just going to tell you right now, Susan and Patty, I want to make sure that we grab these and we can email these folks answers because there's so many people asking so many good questions. And I don't want to die on you guys, but I have to jump onto another one. Curious about the stimulus package on helping flippers. So flippers are somebody who buys and sell a property. Do you think there's anything in there for them?
Yeah, I think the EIDL would be in there for them.
Yep. And if EIDL would be a good one. Plus, here's the deal. If you're paying anybody 1099, your contractors, they can do a PPP loan. They can also do an EIDL. So if you're doing flips and you've been shut down, what I tell people is go to your contractors and tell them to file the EIDL. You file a PPP if you're taking a salary out, and also an EIDL. So you can absolutely do that. Somebody's asking, will we receive copies of the remaining Q&As? No, I know you love them. We will go through stuff like that. Somebody wants all the questions. Oh, you guys are killing me. My little heart's going to pop. All right, we are way over time. Aren't these fun?
They are.
I hope you guys enjoy them just as much as we do. I know that I Hobart and poor Jeff sits here and says, Toby, stop it. You're talking too much. You just do the loser sign on your forehead.
No, I did not do that.
I think Jeff is throwing me shade.
I'd like to take a screenshot to send everybody of this tiny little bar that's on this questions chat to show how many questions there are.
We could do that. I'm going to do it. I'm going to take all the names off. That way you guys see that in that we literally have about 50 questions in a since 4/16. So yeah, some fun. Some of you guys are funny. We enjoy talking to you guys. We enjoy doing this. If you ask questions, we love to grab them. We don't have, like, we're not going to send everybody else's questions out. What you have to do is come and visit us. We'll get through them. Go to AndersonAdvisors.com podcast, and you can listen to some of the other ones. The replays are always in your platinum portal. If you are platinum, we have them all. But you can always go and do the iTunes and Google Play. We have lots of content. I've had some really good podcasts recently. We've had all this COVID stuff, but I have some geniuses on there doing tangible property regs and some other really cool stuff. And I feel bad because, man, there's some cool stuff in the taxes right now that are really set to benefit some people. Anyway, oh, there's somebody who sent us a link that says IRS.gov coronavirus non-filers enter payment info here. So if you haven't filed your taxes, we can get that out. Maybe Patty, you can grab that. It's for the question at 423. Somebody actually gave us the link and we could share it out. Hey, also we put all of our stuff up on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. If you have questions, email them on into Tax Tuesday, Anderson Advisors. We do try to respond to everything. It's always fun. We try to do this. And just remember, people aren't getting paid for this. This is, so don't abuse it. Like we have a full staff that goes in and they all spend time answering these questions. And we just try to make sure that we're sharing as much as humanly possible. Invite your friends, because at the end of the day, if they're going to get through this in their small business, they're going to need every bit of help they can get. Some people are like, why taxes and stuff? Because it's 30 some odd percent of the amount of your income. It's more than your housing and your food and your clothing combined on average as an American. So yes, we are going to work like crazy to make sure that we are saving. Couldn't find that app in the Play Store. Hey, we'll send you out some stuff. The non-filer link, Patty, if you can get it out to people, she might not be able to hear me right now. We'll make sure we get it out to everybody. I'll remember, we'll get that, and we'll make sure that we get it. And thank you, guys. I'm going to jump on to another really cool group to go over the stimulus package. Just keep your eyes out. Help your local businesses. For all your restaurants that are in your local area, they are dealing with, like, some of these may never reopen. So if you can, buy stuff, buy gift cards from them, and help them out. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.